Hi there, and welcome back to Dallas Discusses, the anime podcast. Today we have our first ever guest.
Hello.
Hello, how are you, Chloe?
I am doing absolutely fantastic.
So, Chloe runs an awesome anime-themed Etsy shop. And that is the first thing I brought her here to talk about because I have ordered some stickers from there, and let me tell you, they are amazing. So what inspired you to make an Etsy shop?
So it was actually pretty random. So I first started with earrings, which I don't currently sell because I'm trying to find an easier way to produce them. But it started with earrings. I got this like shrinky dink plastic from Amazon, and I was like, oh, these are absolutely adorable. I love making them. And I posted like a TikTok about it, and it was like my first TikTok to ever get like any likes, even though it got like 60 likes. And I was like, this is top tier content. And like, I think one person commented like, you should sell these. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
it was kind of that kind of started me on it. And at first I was like, oh, I'm just gonna sell stickers or sell earrings. And then I got really into like digital art and like graphic design and stuff. I've always had kind of a bit of a passion for it, but I got an iPad for school because I was gonna be doing online school this year, and I just started like drawing things, and it all started with like the first thing I ever drew was for Avatar. It was a Sokka cactus juice like Ramune style drink, and I was like, this is so fun. And since then I've done like so many different designs.
Yeah, I absolutely love your stickers. They're so cute. My personal favorite is the Kenma with the apple pie in the background. I love that one.
Yeah, those were so fun to make too. I had like a really good time because I had to look into, I remember like reading the Haikyuu manga. I was like, oh, they give like what everyone's favorite food is. And I thought it was so cute that Kenma's was apple pie of all things. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to draw Kenma with a slice of apple pie. And then that led to me drawing Osamu with onigiri because he opens his onigiri shop in the time skip. It just went down a rabbit hole of like me doing so many different designs.
How long does it take you to come up with a design?
Well, it really just depends on what I'm doing. Once I have a general theme, it kind of, the process goes quicker. Like for example, the Haikyuu with the favorite foods. Once I had the idea, it was relatively easy to say, oh, I'll just do this same style of sticker with multiple different characters. It is a little bit more difficult to like come up with like actually like unique and new designs. Like the ones, my most popular selling stickers are the Spotify playlist stickers I do, mm-hmm. which are like these like silhouette style drawing with like a Spotify code for a playlist underneath, and those are really popular. And that was I don't even remember how I came up with those. I think I was I really liked the silhouette style of art, like the color block silhouette, because I at first did that like one of my friends commissioned me to do that for a painting for her and her boyfriend. And I had like a lot of fun with it. So I was like, I'm going to do this for like me and my favorite anime character and make it like an icon. And then I made one for me, and then I made one for you. And I was like, these are really fun and cute to make. And then it's kind of spiraled from there. And I was like, wow, you know what these look like? Spotify playlists. And now I have like a lot of different varieties of that same type of sticker.
Yeah, and your playlists are top tier.
Thank you. They do take, like, I try and pull inspiration for, like, playlists. Like, I'll look at other people's character playlists, and I'll be like, mm-hmm. oh, those songs fit, and then I'll add in some of my own. So they're really fun to make.
Yeah. I love your Ash and Eiji playlist. That one I listen to on repeat when I need a good cry.
Yeah, me too. That's one that, like, I listen to my playlists a lot, but sometimes I get like tired of them. But the Ash and Eiji one, like, I listen to that one so frequently because I just like, I love it so much, and I love them, and like, it's like on a loop in my head.
Yeah, and to kind of go into Banana Fish, that is the other reason you are here. So I know you're a huge fan of Banana Fish. I myself love it, but you have now watched it twice.
Yes. So
I'm sure you picked up on a lot more the second time you watched it.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely hits harder the second time around when you've read, like, headcanons and you've done your research into, like, analysis of different scenes, and it's like everything just feels a lot heavier when you watch it the second time around, and you kind of have that analytical insight that you don't have the first time when you're going into it blind. Like, the biggest thing I notice, like, in the show is, like, the motif of, like, AG being associated with birds and flight.
Yeah, I was doing some research on that earlier on Tumblr, and that is really interesting.
Yeah, like, I didn't catch it the first time around, because when you first watch it, like, you kind of, in my head, when I would see these birds, part of me was thinking, like, oh, like, I've been to New York. New York is full of birds and pigeons, and you see those all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, a way to make the show feel more scenic and, like, more immersive into the scenery. But, like, looking back at it and watching it again, like, the first time we see AG, he's wearing that sweater with that bird on it. Like,
yeah.
It's a very direct, like, hey, this character, you might want to associate him with birds. And that's probably, like, one of the, like, most, like, not subtle hints of, like, AG should be associated with birds, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, it's just, like, it's definitely very, like, continuous throughout the entire thing. Like, there's this one scene where, so when we learn about, like, Max and AG's, or not Max and AG's, eBay and AG's past, and eBay is telling Max, the beginning of the scene when eBay is telling Max, like, how he met AG, why he brought AG to America, because of his pole vaulting incident, and you see, like, in the scene, there's this bird sitting on a tree, and that's where Max is looking while eBay is telling him this, and it's, like, it's a very direct connection, like, this is what we should be thinking of when we think of AG, and even in the second episode, when we see him pole vault to try and save Ash and Skip, it's like that, I think, is the moment that Ash really, like, fell for AG, and this idea of a 19-year-old boy not having to fight to live. He used this freedom he had, this flight ability, to be able to save himself, and I think that, like, that was kind of where Ash, like, he saw AG as having that freedom that he had been denied his whole life under, like, being under Dino for so long, you know, like, but yeah.
Yeah, and the three reactions to trauma and fear are fight, flight, or shell shock, and Ash presents a lot of shell shock because he bottles up a lot of his trauma to try and put on this strong persona. Because he has to. He was forced to his whole life, which I think would lead to him admiring AG's flight reaction even more.
I think that's something to mention, is that it's admiration of AG's freedom in this ability to, like, live without a gun. Like, because that's one of the whole big things, is, like, AG's like, oh, guns, you can't even have a gun in Japan. And I think that it is admiration, where a lot of people sometimes confuse admiration with jealousy, but I think that Ash is almost blown away by the fact that someone like AG can be so free without having to live as he has lived, like, under Dino and under this, like, oppressed, like, yeah, life.
And because Ash, his whole life, like, even with Shorter and Skip and his other friends, they all have their fair share of trauma too. I mean, they're in the, like, gang part of New York City. So he was never exposed to anything as pure and untouched as AG. It's a really deep concept to imagine what he's going through, meeting somebody that is so, I don't want to say carefree, because AG, that's not the right word for him, because he's 100% not carefree. but he, like you said, he doesn't have to worry about carrying a gun. He's not that kind of person. So I think it's probably just a huge shift in both of their realities.
Yeah, it's definitely like so hard to watch Ash and his circumstances because he doesn't have a lot of control over what he went through, and there wasn't a lot of other routes for him to take to escape the things that he went through when he was a child. Like, and so I feel like him meeting AG gave him his first real opportunity to be a young boy. I feel like sometimes we forget that he's only 17 when we meet him, and he's 18 at the end of the anime. Like, he is my age. I'm 18. Like, when I watched it for the first time, I was still 17. I was his age, and I had to, like, part of me was like, this is me and Ash live very different lives, and like, that's almost hard to like take, if that makes sense, when you see someone who is so deserving of like happiness. Ash really just does deserve so much more than what he was dealt in life, and sometimes you can't control someone else's circumstances, and you just have sympathy for them, which is so like there's a big part of me that's like, I would do anything for Ash, even though he's a fictional character, but there are people who live these types of circumstances and have to deal with this type of stuff, and that's hard to like stomach almost. Like, that's another thing about Banana Fish is that it forces you to look at the reality of dark areas of our society and culture that do exist and still exist to this day. Like, I understand the original serialization of the manga was in like the 80s, but the anime being set in 2018 still, it a lot of it still holds true to this day of like the corruptness in our government, the idea of trafficking of children. Like, this is still stuff that is very prominent in our society, and seeing a character go through it and live through this and have to deal with it is so just like absolutely heartbreaking, especially someone like Ash who clearly cares about the people around him and has a very caring nature to him, but has had to turn that caring nature into the nature of being a boss of a gang because of the circumstances he was dealt in life.
I think it was brilliant of them to set it in 2018. Well, I mean, it could be any like modern day, like it could even be now, instead of keeping it in the 80s, because it really does show that there is stuff happening out there, which is so sad that kids are living the same life that Ash unfortunately had to live. And I feel like if I were to watch it a second time, knowing his backstory, it would be even more heartbreaking because the first time I watched, well, the only time I watched it, going through and finding more and more about his backstory, it just broke my heart every time. Because, like, at the beginning, you're like, oh, he's a gang member who, had a tough life. And then every episode, more and more unfolds about how absolutely, excuse my language, but shitty his life was. It's really a shame.
Yeah, having watched it a second time, it's when you know what he's gone through and the amount of like trauma he's been through, you see his reactions change throughout the anime. Where in the beginning, like you mentioned, he's very shell-shocked and he's very like, he deals with this trauma in a very like, I'm gonna bottle it up and I'm not gonna let it affect me type of way. Even for example, like in episode 3 or 4, when he's in prison and those two the prison members when he basically lets them rape him so he can try and get on with his plan to get to the infirmary to get the pill to give to AG when AG comes to visit, he lets that happen, and you can tell that it does affect him, but he tries not to show it because he's like, this isn't the worst I've gone through, I've been through worse. And but when he meets AG and he meets someone he can be fully vulnerable with, and someone who kind of almost carry, not, I'm not gonna say takes away his trauma because that's not what it is, but it's almost like AG helps shoulder the burden and helps him get through it. I think that's when his reaction turns so different towards the end of the anime when Colonel Fox does something similar to him, but at this time it really has left Ash so much more traumatized because he finally found someone to be vulnerable with, and then to be taken advantage of again. I think it kind of warped his perception on the trauma he had dealt with. And, like, that really hurt watching it a second time. Like, watching him go from someone who just took what he was dealt and kind of, like, bottled it up and didn't deal with it. And then to have that one episode, I believe it's episode 11, where he, like, fully breaks down with AG, and he, like, puts his head in AG's lap and is like, am I a bad person? Like, I don't feel anything when I do this, these bad things. And, like, when I think that's the culminating moment where he realizes AG is someone he can be totally vulnerable with, totally himself, and someone who will help him through this. And that's why his reactions to his trauma changes throughout the rest of the anime.
Yeah. I think a lot of people go through analyzing Ash and AG because obviously they are the main characters. Was there anything you noticed about some of the other more minor characters, like their character development and characterization?
Yes. So I really like Yutlung, because Yutlung is basically exactly what Ash would have become had he not found AG. Yutlung has been derived his entire life of love, and he has fueled hate and hate only because of what happened to his mother. And what happened to his mother is totally despicable, and what his brothers did were absolutely awful and inexcusable. But Yutlung's behavior is also inexcusable. This is one thing that, like, some people have trouble with understanding, is that your trauma doesn't always excuse your actions. It can help explain your actions, and it can help to understand the why, but it doesn't excuse what you did. What Yutlung did to AG in trying to kidnap him and trying to kill him over and over again in order to basically show Ash's weakness, and because Yutlung was almost jealous of the fact that Ash had someone to be vulnerable with, but he was also mad at Ash because Ash had someone to be vulnerable with. He was like, Ash, you could have been so much more, but you now have this weakness. And so Yutlung's actions are not excusable, but we can kind of understand where he's coming from, because his entire life has been fueled on hatred, and he has never had someone to love or someone who loved him like his mother did. But his mother was killed before his eyes when he was just a child. And so Yutlung's a very interesting character, and I think that he's someone who I definitely will pay attention to more if I watch it again, because even the second time around, there's always that part of me that's like, oh, like, screw him, he's trying to kill AG, because he is a villain, he is a protagonist, but he's not the worst character, and I don't want him to... I'm not adamantly rooting against him like I was Dino or Colonel Fox. Like, I wasn't rooting for Yutlung's demise like I was Dino.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah.
Yeah, that's understandable. I didn't pay a lot of attention to him the first time I watched it, because you're so involved with Ash and AG's story, because that's the main focus. But I do think the points you brought up about him being Ash without AG are so powerful. Like, I didn't realize that until you told me that, like, a couple weeks ago. And, like, that just absolutely stunned me. Like, the more I think about it, the more I totally see you're right. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's, like, Yutlung never had someone he could be totally vulnerable and open with, like, Ash eventually found with AG. And, like, I think... that is so sad, not having someone that you can be your complete and honest self with. Even the fact that the Lee family totally just denied his existence. Even we see when Shorter, when they're in Los Angeles and Shorter is talking to the Lee family, they say, oh, there's 7 Lee brothers. And Shorter's like, no, there's not. There's 6. They kept Yutlung hidden all this time. And, like, that shows even further that they didn't really care about him. They just used him to further their plots to take over Chinatown and, like, have control over these other people. And I think that's so unfortunate. And Yutlung, I think, is completely aware of the fact that he's being used and is being manipulated by his family, which is why his goal is to take out his family members and to become the top of the Lee family.
Yeah. I feel like his backstory is, like you said, so traumatic. And I think he self-projects onto Ash a lot because they both went through such traumatic events. But it's really a shame to see him go like such an opposite route than Ash did, and have so much vengeance instead of having, you know, the love and care that Ash has for AJ. I feel like if he found somebody he could love, he might have given up the fact that, you know, his brothers did that absolutely heinous act. And he wouldn't spend his whole life trying to, you know, get revenge for it. Which anybody's life in multiple animes, not to like bring up other animes, but when a character devotes their whole life to revenge, they get so focused on it that they can't see past anything else. I'm not sure if you've watched Hunter x Hunter, but Gon, he like totally does inexcusable things all for vengeance. And I think that's a common theme in anime.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when someone devotes their life to revenge or trying to get back at something, it blinds them to the other opportunities in relationships that they could have. Even, like, for example, I don't think you've watched Avatar The Last Airbender, but Azula is a good example of that, where she's so cut on trying to get back at, like, her mother and just the entire system, and she totally throws away these relationships she has, which leads to an epic betrayal moment. Because she disregards the people who do actually care about her. It is slightly different because she did have people who, like, showed, like, legitimate care towards her. And she basically disregarded that relationship in order for this pursuit of vengeance. But, yeah, I think that it's definitely, like, it's not the right choice, but it is almost understandable as why these characters choose these routes. But it is hard to admit, like, especially when there's someone you like. Like, I like Yutlung, and I think his character is very, very interesting, but I do have to, like, keep in mind, like, the things he did are inexcusable, and his trauma doesn't give him a free pass on what he did. And I think that sometimes people forget that, and they try to excuse a character's acts because they're like, oh, but they went through it in the past. Yeah, but that doesn't give them the right to, like, kill a person.
Exactly, because if that happened in real life, they obviously wouldn't excuse that. Like, just because you like a character, like, that's one thing about the anime community that bothers me. If they like a character, they'll excuse anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's not do that.
Yeah, we were just having a conversation about Terashima from Haikyuu. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, oh, he's my favorite, but he really did, like, verbally harass Kyoko there in that one episode.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people forget about that. But yeah, there are a lot of people who are willing to forgive these acts that certain characters do. And it's very, like, I think it's better to like a character and their faults and understand the reasoning behind their actions. Like, I think a good example of that is, like, Bakugo from My Hero. Like, I haven't finished the show yet, but, some of the things he says in, like, season one are so bad and just inexcusable, but you have to understand, like, there is a place he's coming from, but some of the things he said are just not forgivable. And it's better to understand and, like, hold him accountable, almost, and have him still be your favorite character than just to be like, oh, no, he did nothing wrong, he just has trauma. And he just has, like, you know, like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I totally understand what you're saying. I see that a lot in the Hunter x Hunter fandom as well, because a lot of my TikTok, which a lot of people that listen to this podcast come from TikTok, a lot of my TikTok is devoted to Hunter x Hunter, and people blatantly excuse Illumi's manipulation, murder, and transphobia. And they're just like, but no, he's so cute. I'm like, okay, but can we acknowledge that he's literally a heinous person and, like, tried to kill his own family? Like, can we acknowledge that for a minute?
Yeah. But see, then my other, like, favorite type of character are characters that, like, you meet and they, like, look evil at first, but then they, like, switch sides.
Yeah.
Like, A great example of this is Blanca in Banana Fish. When we first meet him, Dino has hired him to kill Eiji, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's his whole purpose at first. But then in the last couple episodes, he partners up with Sing and they go and help out in the end. And I really love Blanca. He's one of my favorite characters.
That was such a switch, and I was so happy about it as well.
Yes, and, like, the way, even, like, the way Blanca acted when he was with Yutlung and Dino versus when he acted when he was with Ash. When he was with Ash, it felt almost like brothers being reunited.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see this, like, sillier side of Blanca, and he has the ability to be more himself, I think. Like, there's this one moment that is just so funny and so Blanca. And it's, because, like, Blanca's a big guy. He's very tall, very broad. But there's this one scene in when the last, I think it's the last episode, where him and Sing are in the mental health institute trying to find other people. And they've been locked in, and Blanca points to a vent and says, we can use that to get out. And when they finally get out of the vent, he can't get out because he's stuck because he's too big.
Yeah.
And it's just like, his reaction to that is just so Blanca. And I really like that when we get to see his, like, good side, and we don't see him just working for money. He is an assassin, and you know what? That's not great. But he definitely, like, is a good character, in my opinion. I really like Blanca.
Yeah, and I like that they did put slight humor in Banana Fish in places. I think it made, because it's a tough show to watch, especially people that watch it like all in one, like one sit through. It's a really heavy show, and I could totally understand why they put like subtle bits of humor here and there.
For sure. Like, it is so much to watch. I watched Banana Fish over 2 or 3 days. My longest sit through being, I think it was like 10 or 12 episodes in one night, because it was my rush to finish it because I was so invested.
Mm-hmm.
But taking so much of that, like, traumatic information in is a lot to handle. So I love when they throw in, like, these cute, like, domestic moments of Ash and Eiji when they live in the apartment together. Like, some of that is just so refreshing to see, because we get to see them living, like, teenage boys, because mm-hmm. that's what they are. They're 18 and 19 at that point, and it's like we actually get to see them living like teenagers, like young adults, and it's very, like, refreshing compared to the usual very trauma heavy moments that we see in the rest of the anime. So yeah, I do like that there's humor and domestic moments that we see to give us that, like, refresher and to remind us that Ash is still a young boy. He is still immature. Like, there's this one of my favorite moments is towards the end of the show, when Jessica has come back to New York. Well, she's come to New York, and because Max said, you have to stay protected because we're getting involved in some big stuff. She comes to New York, and her and Max are bickering, and Ash and Angie both cover their ears and their legs. And it's like kids listening to their parents bicker. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like, it's moments like that you remember, like, they're kids, and they're just young boys, they're immature, they should have the right to be kids still. And I like when they involve in show these moments of, like, hey, don't forget, these are, like, children.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to remember they are still just teenagers, because I understand when you're seeing people involved in so much violence, it's really easy to forget, like, these are young adults. Like, they... It is really hard to forget. And I think it's important to remember, especially when they're, like, goofing around or when they throw the Halloween party. I think it's important to not think that they're, like, you know, just being, like, unnecessarily silly. Like, they are just being their age.
Like, the way I was, like, the reason I saw it so much was, like, when I started the anime, I was the same as Ash's age, and I'm 18 now, and so I'm still his age, and it's like I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm still in high school. Like, he should be in high school. He should be, like, if he were living a normal life, he would be a senior in high school. He would, And you think to yourself, what would you do with your friends on Halloween? You'd have a little party. You'd, you'd carve pumpkins. You might drink a little, even though it's underage. I don't think you should, but they did. And I think that, like, those moments are a good representation of, like, he is a teenager. He should still have some of these moments with the people he cares about, like we would in high school, if that, like, makes sense.
Yeah. I am glad that they included that. And I think we should probably end it there because that was on a happier note, so that the people listening could leave not feeling like, oh my gosh, feeling like how I felt after I finished Banana Fish. So just to like recap, you can follow me on TikTok. My TikTok is Dallas Zoldyck. And then Chloe, if you want to give your TikTok in your Etsy shop, you can go right ahead.
Yeah, so my TikTok is at Scrabble Dad, which is weird. Don't ask about the username. I don't know how I came up with it, but it's Scrabble like the game and then Dad. And then my Etsy shop is Chloe's Anime Jewelry, all one word, no spaces. And yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I love talking about Banana Fish with you. It was such a joy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I also love talking about Banana Fish. I could probably keep talking for another 30 minutes.
Yeah, so I hope I can have you back again soon, and have a wonderful night.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.